שלום. אז אנחנו מבקשים אם אפשר להיכנס ולשבת, אנחנו רוצים להתחיל. תודה.
They're coming. Yeah, it's fine. Everything's okay. They heard. So please come in and take your seats. So I'd like us to begin again, even as other people are coming in. And I hope the first part of the evening makes a ground for us to practice together, and we will go deeper now in the second part. I'd like us to connect with a chant as a way to begin, just to bring our energy together. In the Buddhist tradition, there is a text called the Sutra of Complete and Perfect Wisdom in 80,000 verses, very big thing, that is summed up in 8,000 verses, a shorter version, and in 800 verses. And fortunately for your sake tonight, it's also summed up in one syllable, which saves a lot of reading and study for your... And the reason this one syllable is considered the expression of perfect wisdom is in Sanskrit it's considered the first sound in life and the last sound, but most importantly, it's the seed syllable of letting go or opening. It's the seed syllable, ah. And I want us to simply sing ah for a bit. And as you do, feel what wants to get let go of. We'll sing it for a little bit, and then we'll sit for a minute or two in the stillness after the ah. So... Ah, keep it going, ah. harmony, ah, ah, and close your eyes, ah, 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 ah. So here we are in this human predicament, if you will, of being incarnated on this earth in a human body. This mysterious thing, nobody remembers asking to come, right? But somehow you arrived and they said, well, here you are, welcome. You know, here's this human existence. And what I'm pointing to tonight is not something new. I'm really just reminding you of what you already know. This is not something that you have to learn. It's really something that we remember in ourselves. And part of this deep memory is that the most important things in our life, if you have the privilege, for example, of being with someone when they're dying, and especially having a conscious death at the end, the questions are very few. Did I love well? Did I live fully? I mean, there's not much else you can ask. Maybe did I learn to let go? Because otherwise, at the end, you have what's called a crash course in it. But mostly, did I learn to live and love well? And the big questions of the society and the world are not going to be solved by governments or politics alone. They really have to be solved first in the human heart, collectively. In one of the most unlikely aspects of totalitarian lawmaking, last summer in July, the Chinese State Administration, the Ministry for Religious Affairs, made a law that banned Tibetan lamas in Tibet from reincarnating without government permission. And it stipulates the procedures by which one is to reincarnate, an important move to institutionalize management of reincarnation by the government. This is true. You know, of course they're trying to control the Dalai Lama, but that's how laws are. I mean, there's a place for law, absolutely, but there's also such a limit to law, because that's the outer law. And what we do when we sit and when we meditate and when we let ourselves, let the mind quiet a little bit or step back from the mind, let the heart soften and open, is we return to a wisdom that is the deeper law. The word dharma in Sanskrit is really the word for the law, the natural law, the way of life of what we are, the Tao. Now, one of the complementary practices to the practice of mindfulness that we've started to work with earlier this evening is the practice of loving compassion. Metta is one of the names for this practice. And even though it's inherent in us to love, it's there in us, like the story that I told of Salam. When he opened, he realized that he was love, that we are all connected in love. But still, we practice as a way to come back to this deep knowing. And to do loving kindness meditation practice, how many of you have done the loving kindness practice? Raise your hand. Probably half of you. Okay, wonderful. We're not going to do it tonight because we've got a couple of other practices to do, but I want to talk about it. To do it, there are different versions, but quite simply, you start in whatever way most easily opens your heart. You think of the person or the people, the loved one, the friend, where you feel most naturally and easily your love. And you picture them, and as you visualize them, you recite inwardly wishes that they might be safe and well and healthy and happy and free in their heart. And you wish them well, may you be well, may you be safe, may you be held in love. And then you picture another person you care about, and you do that for a while. And then after you get a little bit good at it, you know, with it's easy with someone you love, then you imagine how you would look to them. And you do it for yourself, which is not so easy for some people to love yourself. May I be safe and well? If that's too egotistical, right? You know, there's this, you can be loving toward others, but often there's one person that gets left out. Moi, as Miss Piggy would say on Sesame Street, you know, this... this sense, okay, love for others, but how about this one? And so you open the channel of love by repeating the wishes over and over, and then you include yourself, and then you go to other friends and to various people around, and finally when you get good at it, you start to bring in difficult people. And your heart's opening and you're loving, and then you think of this difficult person and you say, nah, I'm not going to love that son of a gun, you know, nah, never. And your heart, which was so open, goes, and it shrivels. And then you realize, you know, this doesn't feel so good. Maybe it's not worth it. All right, I'll love you a little bit, not because I really love you, but it's so nice to have the heart open. Okay, even you, may you be well a little bit, you know, a little bit. And then little by little, it's as if you reteach the heart the way to love. Now, my friend Sharon Salzberg, who is a wonderful Buddhist teacher, and there are many, and wrote a book on called Loving Kindness, which is on this practice. And I've written books that have this meditation in it, and many other people, Stephen Levine and Pema Chodron, various people have versions of loving kindness. So she says, I was leading a day-long retreat. Sometimes we'll do a week of this love practice, but I was leading a day-long retreat of metta loving kindness in Oakland, California. I try to have the participants practice walking out on the street so they can wish well or love for everybody who's walking by. One woman was having a big struggle with this metta. It felt so dry. I don't love anybody. I don't feel anything. She wanted these big feelings, and nothing would come. I told her it was more like planting seeds in the winter, and when the rain comes, then something will grow. So during the next walking, she went across the street. There was a little train station. And she began to walk in the train station, and a train pulled in, and she decided to do her metta, her love practice. And at the end of the train, lots of people got off. One man got off, who was in a hurry, distracted, not so aware, and, you know, wearing a suit. And she noticed herself judging him. He looks so uptight. And then she judged herself. She said, see, I'm just no good at love. You know, I can't do it. But she took a breath and said, all right, I'll try. And she continued, may you be well, may you be safe, not knowing the man at all. And then he walked up to her. And he said, excuse me, this may sound very strange, but I'm facing a really bad situation in my life right now, and you seem to be such a kind and peaceful person, and I'd just like to ask if you would make a prayer for me. And she did. So the practice, we practice, and then something happens because we attend. What we attend to, when somebody says, I want a little attention, it's not a small thing. To give attention is a beautiful thing. To a child, to a flower, to a garden. To give attention is to give respect. And so we give a little bit of attention to love over and over, and then soon the seeds start to grow. Now here we are living in one of the great koans of the world, right? The koan of Israel and Palestine and Jewish and Christian and Muslim and, Buddhist. Oh my God, you're getting it all coming in. What to do, you know? And meditation is really has two parts. It's like breathing in and breathing out. The breath in, you sit and you quiet the mind and open the heart. You find a way to come to your center, to reconnect with wisdom. And then in the out-breath, you go and you act in the world from a place of understanding and compassion and inner freedom. In Zen, they say there are only two things. You sit and you sweep the garden. And it doesn't matter how big the garden is. Right? So we've done some sitting practice, but then the question is, how do we go from the silence of the desert or that beautiful courtyard in the middle of, you know how it is in the Middle East, you go into the middle of the building and there in the middle is a fountain and a palm tree and this beautiful courtyard which we have in ourselves, this inner courtyard. Oh, okay, I found a place of stillness, the fountain, the palm tree, I've taken the time to get into the stillness of the desert. But that's breathing in. Now, what happens when we go out? So the next practice that I want us to do is a way for you to learn how to bring this meditation into the difficulties of your life, okay? I mean, that's what you paid for, right? Sort of. Or whatever. I don't know why you paid, but it's too late, so. So this is a visualization, and visualizations don't work for everybody. Do the best you can with it. Visualize, imagine as best you can. And if it doesn't work for you, we're doing four or five other practices. You just pick the one that works for you. Don't worry about it. So let yourself sit up. And allow your eyes to close gently. And come back, take two or three deeper breaths, and just come into the presence of the breath and body. Now in this stillness, as you let yourself be quiet, I would like you to visualize, to remember actually, just remember, think of very simply, a situation of great difficulty in your life, particularly ones with another person or other people. Can be family, work, community, all kinds of things, but a situation of considerable difficulty. And as you remember it, let yourself remember what it was like to be back there in the middle of it. Picture it and remember. How did your body feel in the middle of it? You can know. And then notice the energy of the situation when it's difficult. How you're reacting. What other people are doing or saying. And how hard it is for you, maybe how you get caught in it. And let yourself feel really how difficult it is, as bad as it is. And now all of a sudden, wherever you are, there is a knock on the door, or the doorbell rings, or even if you're outside, you see somebody coming. You don't know who it is yet who's come. And I'll tell you who is going to come. In a moment, you will, when you open the door, when you look, there will appear a being of light, a being of great wisdom and compassion and love and courage. It might be the Buddha, or it might be Solomon, or it might be Mother Mary, or Kuan Yin, the goddess of infinite mercy, or Gandhi. I don't know who it will be, but some amazing, wonderful being. And so let yourself be surprised. Open the door or look out and see which being of light will come to you. You can know, you can see. And now this being of light walks right up to you and says, having a hard day? And you say, yes, yes. They say, good, let me show you how I would do this. You give me your body and become invisible, and I'll be inside your body. And I'll show you how I would handle it. So now you become invisible, and in your body is Solomon or Jesus or Mother Mary or Kuan Yin or the Buddha or somebody like that, and you follow them back in the situation. Nobody knows, but that's who's inside. And first, notice how their body feels when they come in. What is it like in the body when this being of light is in you? And then notice how they listen. How they attend and pay attention. And notice how they respond. Let them show you, teach you. Let them finish up. Let them show you what they can to teach how to do this beautifully. And then as they finish up, they say, wait a second, excuse me, to whoever you're with, whoever they're with now, excuse me, I have to leave for a moment. And they go back out to the place you met them. You follow them. And now they give you back your body, and they stand there in their radiant form. And before they leave, they reach underneath their robes and pull out a beautiful gift, a clear symbol, a symbol of just what you need to help you in these difficulties. They give you a little present that's symbolic, and they place it in your hands. You can see it. Hold it up to the light or the sun. You can know what it is. And then before they leave, they lean over to you, touch you quite gently, and whisper into your ear a few words of advice, just what you need to hear, the wisdom to help you in this great difficulty. Let yourself hear or think of or imagine or sense the gift and the words any way you can. You can sense, you can picture. And take their words and the gift, pay your respects to them. Let yourself come back to this time and place. So this is a very simple visualization. A few questions for you. First of all, if the visualization worked, it doesn't for everybody, but for those that could visualize, picture a little bit, who came? Just give me the names of some of the people who came. Who? Santa Claus, okay. Who else? Who? What? Jesus came. Who else? Baal Shem Tov came. Who? Your father? Who? Moses came? The Dalai Lama came? Who? Chandrezig, the Buddha of compassion. All right, so we had the Buddha and Jesus and Moses and the Baal Shem Tov, you know, and Santa Claus, and, you know, wise fathers and grandparents and grandmothers. Basically, in 2 minutes, the room filled with saints. I mean, isn't that amazing? It didn't take very long, 2 minutes. And Baal Shem Tov appears, and so does, you know, Solomon and the Dalai Lama and Chenrezig. It's that close. What kind of gifts did they give? Anybody? A what? Well, I don't understand.
Courage.
Okay. Patience. What other, anyone's gift, symbols?
Star.
What?
Star.
I don't understand.
Star.
A star, okay? People translate for me, okay? A heart. Very simple gifts. A stone, a star, a heart, a crystal, you know. And yet you know what that star means. You know what that stone means of the earth and what it means to carry it and tend to it, what it means to have a heart or, you know, whatever that heart was made of, you know, of a crystal or something beautiful. The gifts are so simple, and yet they are also wise. They're true. And the words that came, what kind of advice did you get from Moses? I mean, he's been giving advice for a long time. What did he say, or whoever? Anybody here? Compassion, one advice. What else? Say it again. Okay, so everything is impermanent. Everything is selfless. Buddhist teachings. What else?
Light.
Light, just the words of light. Anything else?
Belief.
Can someone?
Belief.
Belief. So here we were in a few minutes. First, these beautiful figures of wisdom come. Here comes the Baal Shem Tov and Dalai Lama and Solomon and, you know, Chenrezig, the Buddha of Compassion, and so forth, just like that, giving the gifts that we need. How was their body? It was like this, you know. I know what it's like. You see, picture yourself in the difficulty, and you're tense, and you're tight, right? And it's difficult. And then Baal Shem Tov waltzes in there, or the Dalai Lama, or Gandhi, or whoever it happens to be. Easy, more relaxed. You know already what your body feels like with wisdom. It's not far away. You already carry the deep understanding of what it is like to enter this world, even the difficulties of this world, with graciousness, with some centeredness and presence and relaxation that's not weak, but actually has courage and dignity and beauty in it. You already know how it feels. So this isn't something that you need to learn. In a certain way, meditation is just letting go of stuff so that you can remember it. When you go to meditate, it's like it's the dump, it's the garbage place. You let go of the worries and thoughts and things like that, and you come back to this original beauty or nobility and wisdom that is your own heart. So I hope you learned something in that, at least some of you did, that was important. Now, what's also true is that sometimes we need help to release the fear and pain and trauma that we carry. Sometimes we sit in meditation and we can let it go, or the Baal Shem Tov or Moses or, you know, the Buddha of Compassion or Kuan Yin will come to us. But sometimes the trauma, the suffering that we've had, the pain that comes, we're stuck in it. It's stuck in our body, in our nervous system. And we know somehow that it's important to let it go. It is like the two ex-prisoners of war who had been in a war prison camp that meet some years later. Now they are out, and one says to the other, "Have you forgiven your guards and your captors?" And the second one says, "No, I will never forgive." And the first one says, "Well then, they still have you in prison, don't they? You understand? Because the real prisons are the prisons that we make for ourselves." And here was Nelson Mandela walking out of 27 years of prison and torture in Robben Island in South Africa with so much dignity and magnanimity and graciousness and compassion and courage that he changed the whole vision of the people of South Africa. So no one can put you in prison in your heart. And no one can free you. You are already free. You already have this capacity to be free. And one of the beautiful things I've seen in traveling around Israel and these peace groups and people I've been meeting is that there are many, many skillful means, not just meditation, but NVC, nonviolent communications, and wise speech, and somatic trauma work, somatic experience, and all these different practices that help us to release the fears and trauma that we carry with attention so that this good heart that we have can be where we live, where we dwell. Now, sometimes the only way that we can find this freedom when things are really difficult is to grieve and to weep and to really honor the pain. You can't skip over it. People want to meditate and be happy, and it's called a spiritual bypass, an end run. I don't want to deal with the difficult things. I'm just going to be happy, you know. It doesn't work that way, because when you run, all that stuff follows you. It comes with you. You know this. I work sometimes in Los Angeles with street gangs, with kids who are in the Crips and the Bloods in this undeclared war on the streets. Lots of violence. Or with kids coming out of Oakland and Chicago, where there's a lot of street violence. and they come to these special retreats that we have for young men. And they come and they sit in the back with their baseball caps pulled down and their sweatshirts, and we're talking about meditation and poetry and myths and stories. It's like, yeah, man, right. I mean, I don't care, you know, poetry, so forth. So then we make an altar. We make just a table and light a candle on the table and say, before we begin, we want you to go down. We have this place in the trees, in the woods in California, where we meet often. We want you to go down to the little stream, the water, and to go and bring a stone for every person that you know who has died, who's been killed or shot, or that you may have killed. And these are 16, 17, 18-year-old young men, sometimes 20 years old. And they will bring back sometimes a handful of stones, 10, 20 stones of these guys in their gangs who've been shot and killed. Young people shouldn't know so many dead people. And they carry the stones with such tenderness and place each one on the table. We don't even have to say anything. And other people come and put their stones. We just say their name and you put it on the table. And in 15 minutes from this, the room becomes a temple. And they are present because we are all there with our shared sorrow and our shared losses. And when we see that, we see from the heart. We say, oh, this is our humanity. The beauty of our humanity, the almost unbearable beauty and the unbelievable suffering that are wedded together in our human life. And this is really what meditation asks, a kind of courage and finding a way, sometimes to weep the tears and let the heart break open. I did a walk last week. I was part of Middle Way's a silent walk through Jerusalem to the Mount of Olives that was beautiful. But some days later, I did a walk with a wonderful Arab peacemaker named Khalid Mahamid, who is a businessman and a lawyer and very well educated, very sophisticated. And his work is to bring the understanding of the Holocaust to the Arab community. So the walk was from Yad Vashem to Kalandia in Ramallah. And he had all these pictures of Auschwitz and Birkenau. And first we walk through the Hasidic neighborhoods in Jerusalem, you know, and he's wearing a keffiyeh, and clearly this Arab guy walking through the Hasidic neighborhood and with his signs, and people go like, what is this guy doing? And he says, I am teaching the Arab community about the Holocaust. And these, you know, the Hasidic, it was amazing. You are doing this? And then we walked, you know, all the way up to the wall and around through the wall and into Ramallah, Kalandia, and met different Palestinian people. And at first they would be resistant. Why do we have to learn about this? You know, we are suffering the occupation. And he would give a few surahs from the Quran about what it means to be human in this divine world, this divine sacred world. And then he would show these pictures and he would say, if you do not understand the suffering of the Jewish people, you won't know why what is happening to you from the Jewish Israelis is happening. You won't know. You must see this. And by the time he was done, 5 minutes, because he's this beautiful big heart, 5 minutes, he said, oh yeah, I guess we have to know this. And maybe if we understand this, then also other people will understand our suffering, whatever our suffering is. If you open the heart, it's like opening the door. Sorry to say, you get joy and sorrow. You get love and grief. If you keep the door closed, you don't have. But if you want joy and beauty, you also have the tears. It is woven together, night and day, joy and sorrow, praise and blame. And we are woven together, in Martin Luther King's word, in the mutual garment of destiny that the Buddha calls the truth of interdependence. And if you don't think you're interdependent with the Arab world and the Muslim world, in California where I live, starting this next year, the majority of people will not be white. The majority of people in California will be Hispanic, Latino, and African American, and Asian American. And whites who are going to be will be this year the minority in California in the biggest state in America. So, duh, I think we actually have to start to relate to each other. We have to do it. We are woven in a mutual garment of destiny. And your destiny is woven with the destiny of all those around. So what do we do with this pain? Because everybody has a piece of this cosmic pain in your heart. You are sharing in that. You are given a piece. This is part of your humanity. Albert Camus says, we all carry within us our places of exile, our crimes, our ravages. Our task is not to unleash them in the world, but to transform them in ourselves and in others. So here we have one more practice to do, which helps us to remember who we really are underneath all the pain and the stories that we have. And this is a tough practice. My wife, who's very private and introverted, quiet, she says, this is too hard for me. But you're Israelis. You're tough. You can do this. It's okay. And this is going to be a practice that you have to do in pairs, which is hard given the way we're sitting, but I think that we can do it. And it's a practice of the reminder of the awakened heart. The awakened heart in Buddhism is the heart of wisdom or equanimity, of love. But when love meets pain, it turns into compassion. Whenever there's love and you see the pain in another, it turns to compassion. When you see the happiness in another, love turns to joy. So this is the way of seeing that. So turn towards someone sitting near you that you can look at. And if you don't have a partner that you can look at, you don't have to know them. This is not dating or something. This is just 10 minutes. If you don't have a partner or you're at the end of a row, you can stand up and stand with somebody, you know, on the aisle or the steps. That's okay. Or you can squish around in your seat and find somebody behind you. Okay? So you have just... Who doesn't have a partner? Put your hand in the air if you don't have somebody to do this with. And then look around and try and get closer. Squish closer to that person. You can do it, whatever you need to. And if you can't, you know, it's okay. But see if you can. All right, so be quiet. So this is going to be about 7 minutes or 10 minutes with your partner. So take a breath. And now turn toward the person in whatever way you can. Who is there? And be quiet for a moment. Take a deep breath. Just let go. And then look into the eyes of this other person. And as you take a deep breath, if you feel uncomfortable, the urge to laugh or look away, just note being embarrassed with patience, with gentleness, and come back when you can to the eyes of this person. For you may never see this person again. And the opportunity to behold, it's true, you don't know, the opportunity to behold the eyes of another person in this moment is given to you. And there are four aspects of the awakened heart. So first, as you look into this person's eyes, see another being with a beautiful spirit and an exquisite heart under there. There are gifts and strengths in this being and tremendous potential. Behind these eyes are great reserves of courage and intelligence and wisdom and patience, gifts of which this person themselves may not even know, that could bring such healing to this earth. And as you see them and the beauty that's behind these eyes, feel how naturally you want this person to be free from difficulty, from fear and confusion, how you want them to be well. And how if they were your own child, you would wish them well. You would wish them safe from harm, to be happy and free. And know that what you are now experiencing is the great heart of loving kindness. It is natural to us. And then take a deep breath as you continue to look and release the loving kindness and look again into these eyes. And now let yourself become aware of the measure of pain that is in there. There are sorrows and burdens accumulated in this life, as in every human life, that you can only guess at. There are disappointments and losses and loneliness and trauma, hurts beyond telling. Let yourself open to this pain, to the hurts this person may never have told another human being. You cannot fix this pain, but you can be with it. With a spirit of courage and presence. And imagine that they were a frightened child, hurt, in pain. What your natural response would be to this suffering, to reach out, to hold, to comfort. And know that what you are now experiencing is the great heart of compassion. It is essential for the healing of the world. And again, take a deep breath and let this go and continue to look in the eyes. And now as you look into the eyes of this person, let yourself see the happiest moments of their life, their best adventure as a young child, the creative force in them, the delight in taking risks and making beautiful things happen and celebrating success and overcoming obstacles, all this joyful creative energy, to laugh in triumph and to overcome difficulties, and feel the joy that is there, that is possible in them, their greatest, happiest moments. And know that as you see in these eyes this joy and happiness, what you are experiencing is the universal mudita, the quality of joy and happiness in one another's deep happiness. Rest in it. Trust it. It is part of your home. And let these feelings go, and for the last time, continue to look in these eyes and take a breath. And as you look this last time, let your awareness sink deep like a stone sinking below the level of what words can touch, to the deep web of connection that weaves us all into life. And as you look deeply, see the being in front of you, see the consciousness behind these eyes, as if seeing the face of one who at another time and place has been young and old, awake and asleep, who has been caught and free, who at another time and place may have been your son or daughter, your mother or father, your partner or friend, your enemy, your teacher, your student. And now you see with the eyes of eternity how your lives rest together in this great web of life itself. Rest in this knowing, in this deep and timeless peace from which all arises, without struggle. Let this be a homecoming to your own true nature. Who are we really? Not this body or thoughts, not the small self. Let yourself know the timeless consciousness that weaves together all of life. It is your own and theirs, and they are one. Trust it. Rest in it. It is your home. And finally, let yourself come back. Acknowledge to this person in any way you like, whatever that was. Take a moment. Minutes. You survived too, huh? How was that? Was that okay? It's really amazing because we live with people and there are people around us and they seem different, or people that we live even in our same family or home. And we forget to really look. We forget to really see who we are. We get so lost. I mean, I know when my daughter was a teenager, sometimes we would have a big struggle or fight. She wanted to go out very late, and I was playing dad, and no, you can't. You know how that is. And after the fight, she would go to sleep, and sometimes she would be sleeping, and I would sit on the edge of her bed and look at her sleeping there with the kind of innocence and beauty that she had from the day that she was born. You know, and I had to play dad and she had to play teenager. We all have our roles. But it's so important to drop beneath the roles, to remember who we really are. And when we do, there comes a tenderness and a vulnerability and a courage and a fearlessness. All of the beautiful things that one might want to develop in spiritual life, they really are in us already. And to meditate is just to take the time to sit and quiet the mind and open the heart and remember so we can see in this way. Now, in Israel, there has been great suffering, and in Palestine and all of the Middle East. And because you have suffered so greatly, you also can learn great compassion from this suffering. You can. And from this great compassion can come great wisdom and understanding, the wisdom that you saw in those eyes and in yourself. And it brings this freedom. Then you say, well, what should I do? What do I do? What is my place in the things that need tending and mending? A school principal in San Francisco used to like to make sandwiches for homeless people. After several days a week, after she finished school, when she wasn't tired, she would make these sandwiches and go out on the street and give them to people because she felt like it. And if they didn't want it, she didn't care. She wasn't doing it to be a special person. She just did it out of the love of her heart. It felt right to do. The local newspaper found out about it and wrote a story, and she became a minor celebrity in her area. So, inspired by her work, other teachers and people began to send her money for this ministry. To their surprise, they all received their money back with a short note that said, "Make your own damn sandwiches." So once you see, you can't forget that you saw, you have seen. Once you see, then it's time to get up and make your own sandwiches, to bring your own love in whatever way, to raise children or make a conscious business or do education or plant a beautiful garden. You all, or do the work of peace or reconciliation or whatever it happens to be as the Bodhisattva. There is such longing in this land, and there's such beauty in this land that's in you to be brought forth. And one of the last things, one of the great secrets to say, perhaps, to make it really work well, is that you have to live and do this work from the place of eternity, which you just saw. You know, don't tell me you don't know it, because you just were there. It's not about time, but it's about doing things because they are the right thing to do. So one last little story for you, and then we'll close our evening. A friend of mine, who has also been a teacher, is a man named Ari Ratana in Sri Lanka, and he is one of the greatest community development organizers in all of Asia. And the UN gave him a big award because he helped with the tsunami more than anybody else, more successfully than anyone else in the whole Pacific Basin. And Ari was a high school teacher, you know, 50 years ago. Now he's 75. And he brought his students to poor villages from the richest school in Sri Lanka. They thought they were going to help the poor people. And he had the poor people in the villages make this big feast for them. Because everybody has something to give, and that dignity of everyone must be seen. And soon the rich students began to realize, oh, we have something to learn from these people. And they built a school, and they helped dig a well, and it spread. Sarvodaya was his organization of spiritual work from that village, so much that it was spread to one-third of all the villages in the country. And it wasn't to build schools or build roads or dig wells. He said, that's not really our work. Our work is to dig wells and build schools as an excuse to teach people how to love one another again, to make a spiritual. The schools are just the excuse for the love. So Sri Lanka's been in a bad civil war, as many of you know, and 5 years ago the Norwegians made a peace treaty, helped, that's now falling apart. So Ari Ratana called all of his followers to come together to talk about supporting the peace in Sri Lanka. And 650,000 people came to Anuradhapura, to the great temple, 2,000-year-old temple. And when he got up, he said that those who are wise, he said the foolish people, ordinary people, see the results of things, but those who are wise see the causes. This is taught in Buddhist teaching, but anywhere wise. So if we look at the causes, there have been 500 years of causes for our civil war, 400 years of British colonial oppression, 500 years of conflict between Muslims and Buddhists and Hindus, 200 years of economic disparity between the rich wet parts of the country and the poor dry parts. So it's going to take us 500 years to fix this. And here is the Sarvodaya 500-year peace plan. 5 years, ceasefire. First 10 years, rebuild schools and roads. For the first 25 years, we learn each other's languages and religions. 50 years, we have an economic plan to make the economy more even for everyone. And after 100 years, we have a big council of elders to see, how are we doing? Is this going okay? And then another 100 years, we do it again and again to 500 years to make this a beautiful place. And when I heard this from Ari, who is a friend, I was so touched because it was the words of an elder, the voice of a wise person who wasn't worried about the next election, you know, or the next political thing or something. It was somebody who carried this beautiful vision for the whole of the country. Because what matters is not the immediate results. Sometimes it gets worse. You know that. Things have gotten worse here. What matters is the value, the justness, the rightness, the truth of what you do. And when you do it, it's like planting seeds in the desert. You quiet the mind and open the heart, and then you plant the seeds in the desert. And if you plant beautiful seeds, we know that the rains will come, and sometime in the spring, they will blossom. They will make something beautiful. This is the law of life itself, that when beautiful seeds are planted, sooner or later, if you have a beautiful seed, it will bear fruit. It is the work of bodhisattvas and the work of ordinary people. It's the work of love, of a moment, of respect, of dignity, of care. And you each have it to give to yourself, to your family, to your community. And this work we've done this evening is just a reminder, who are we really, what matters in this world, and how we can live from this. And it brings such joy. I guess the last tiny story I tell you, and then I finish. The Dalai Lama came to New York to lead the Kala Chakra initiation, this great prayer for the healing of the world in Madison Square Garden. And there were 10,000 people and a big throne in the middle. And when he came in, there were the Tibetan trumpets that sounded and the cymbals and then that deep chanting, oh, you know, they do all the monks and this whole thing. And here's the Dalai Lama coming to give the highest Tibetan teachings, and he climbs the steps up to the top of this throne with silk and beautiful carpets. And at the top, to make it comfortable, they had put a couple of bed mattresses, right? So he sat down on it, and it bounced. And then he bounced again. And pretty soon, here's the Dalai Lama giving the highest teachings of Tibet, and he sits there, and he starts bouncing like a kid, in the middle of Madison Square Garden with 10,000 people before giving the highest teachings of Tibet. And somebody said to him, how can you be happy? And he said, you know, when so much suffering has happened. And he said, well, in Tibet, the Chinese Communist Army, they've burned our temples, they have destroyed our sacred texts, they have taken away so much of our culture. Why should I also let them take away my joy? Don't lose your joy. It's beautiful, and it's your gift. Let us just sit for 30 seconds, and then Stephen has an announcement to make, and we will be done. Stephen, you can come up as we sit. Or Toma. Please.
I'd like to thank Dr. Kornfield for this wonderful evening.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you. My great pleasure. Really.
And I'll just invite Stephen Fulder to say a few words.
I want to thank all of you, too, for coming and for bringing your energy here. And indeed, Jack, I have no words.
Thank you. Thank
I must
you,
say,
friend.
Jack took the initiative just to arrive, and that's a big donation. And here's a small present from Tovana.
Oh, good. Chocolate. You?
And I want to thank also all the people who gave so much to make this event happen. A large group of people working intensively and quietly and mindfully to make this event just right. Not too much, not too little, just fitting and harmonious. So thank you for the people organizing this and for organizing all of Tovana activities. And I should say that everything that Tovana is doing is done with the heart and the awareness of giving. I realize you have paid tickets. There was no other way that Tovana could have done this evening without that. But everything Tovana does is done from the heart of giving. Nearly all the courses that Tovana and the retreats and the weekends and the evenings, there's no charge. There is an opportunity for donation. There has been some profit for this evening, and Jack has kindly said he will not take any of the profit for this evening, and he wants it to go to in the same spirit of donation. So in discussion, some of that will go to humanitarian work, particularly bringing very sick Palestinian children to treat in hospitals in Israel.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. That's beautiful.
And some of the money will also go to help Tovana reach out to communities in Israel, particularly Arab-speaking communities, and widen the circle and find ways of creating a language which spreads out and is not just held by the few. And lastly, I want to thank the Dharma, because it's something that is with us 24 hours. It's available to every one of us. It's in our true nature. And so we can all share in that thanks that we're held by authentic spiritual teachings which are available to us all our lives. So thank you.
Thank you. Be safe, be well, be joyful also. Good night.